I hear so often, you know, I want work-life balance. And I understand what it means to some people. Really what that means to me, it's not work-life, it's life. I mean, when you find your calling, you find what you're doing, it becomes part of who you are and part of that DNA. And therefore, you don't have to bounce back and forth. And when you have something like that, then who you really are, it tends to be then communicated or seen very naturally, both from the people and your teammates you're working with, as well as in your home and your personal friends that you hang out with.
This is the Rebel HR Podcast, the podcast where we talk to HR innovators about all things people leadership. If you're looking for places to find about new ways to think about the world of work, this is the podcast for you. Please subscribe from your favorite podcast listening platform today and leave us a review. Rebel on, HR Rebels. All right, Rebel HR listeners, super excited for our guest here this week. We have with us Bert Miller. He currently serves as chairman and founder of Protus Global and Ace Talent Curators, co-founder of BCC Media, and president and CEO of MRI Network, a network-centric recruiting organization that offers consulting, training, contract staffing, and community building to over 325 search firms worldwide. Bert is also an active speaker, mentor, advisor, and investor. He hosts the MRI Network podcast and his podcast series, Beyond the Bottom Line. Bert, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. Great to be here, Molly.
And we have Molly Burdess joining us. Molly, thank goodness you're here because our guest is exceptional and I'm going to need your expertise.
As always, I'm so excited to be here.
Sounds good. Well, Bert, I'm really excited for the conversation today. You know, this is an exciting opportunity to talk to somebody who I've actually had an opportunity to work with your organization in the past. Your MRI has helped me with some searches in my business in the past. We're really going to be talking about talent acquisition, innovation in the space, some of the things you're seeing. But before we dive into that, I'd like to understand, how did you find yourself in the talent acquisition space?
Yeah, it's an interesting question and a great question, Kyle. My background, I came out of school, went to work for the Gallo Winery. They placed me in a distributor in Indianapolis, Indiana. And then I was fortunate enough to meet a recruiter based out of Omaha, Nebraska, who introduced me to an opportunity with Revlon North America. So that was my first interaction with direct hire and executive search. And was able to win that position at Revlon, spent 7 years there. And then I was in sales and led their college recruiting program at Indiana University and Colorado State. And when I was trying to think about what I wanted to do and coach my children and spend time with them as they got older, I decided I was going to open a search firm in Protus Global. And I thought it was just going to be just like the college recruiting program. And I found out quickly that is a bit different, executive search versus college recruiting. So I had my rude awakening in 1995, but luckily we're still here.
That's funny that you mentioned that. And I think many of the HR practitioners on here that have been in the field for a little while have felt that. They can feel that journey. I remember my first recruiting job was a campus recruiting coordinator, you know, career fairs. And, then about 10 years later, then it's, you're doing the executive recruiting, you know, internal, but executive recruiting. And yeah, it's a little bit different when you're talking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed college students, versus trying to find seasoned executives and skilled technical talent. So, as you went through that journey, first of all, kudos for starting and building up, Protus Global into what it is today. What were some of the key things you learned along the way?
Yeah, when I think about some of the things that would have been great to have known for me, I came from sales, Kyle. So finance was not my strong suit at the time. So, you know, having the ability to engage with somebody from a financial perspective, the complexities particularly now, the complexities of multiple businesses that I have and the different solution sets that we're offering our clients between direct hire and contract and, you know, the way those the finances and the cash flows through those various solution sets is it has a bit of complexity to it. So my advice to anybody out there that's listening, you're starting your business today, is just ensure that you, if you're not a finance guru yourself, go hire yourself a great CFO, which is what I did. Ensure you have advisors behind you that are creative in deal structuring. It is the number one thing of running a business, and it really offers you the ability to be creative and agile in the marketplace when you know how to manage the monies, how to forecast, and how to make decisions based on certain triggers and situations.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit because I do have a question. So you work with direct hire and contract. I'm curious where you're seeing the industry going. It's been a while since I've been in an organization that we've used contract, and we personally prefer direct hire. Do you see the industry shifting one way or the other?
Yeah, it's interesting. That's a great question, Molly. Look, pre-COVID, you know, we had about 160 million people working in the U.S. and 60, give or take, 65% of those were in direct hire or full-time employee, and 35% were working contract. Yet that the pie was shifting at that point in time, both in numbers and in work arrangement, and in time in the roles, I should say. The 65% was shrinking. The time in the roles were now running under 4 years. Contract staffing, on the other hand, was 35% and growing. And time in the roles in these contract roles were averaging over 3 years plus. So you had this convergence happening between direct hire and contract staffing. Then 2020 hit, and the pandemic. And there was a lot of uncertainty that was going on during that period of time, like many of the listeners probably felt. But since that time, the acceleration of contract staffing has blown up. NMRI Network, we've grown our business 76% year over year the last 2 years. So it's really interesting dynamic that we're starting to see because people are looking for different work arrangements. And flexibility. And I think that's impacting and accelerated based on what we've felt over the last 19 to 20 months.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think it's a great example of, you know, being use the word flexible. I feel like that's like the word of the year in all aspects of business, but especially in people operations. But I think that I just remember, you know, back when the quarantine was happening, and you know, we weren't sure what was going to happen. You know, I'll be honest, I thought, oh, you know, this might help. This actually might help us, you know, shore up some of these staffing issues, and you know, maybe, you know, as much as I don't want people to be unemployed, this might make it easier to hire for some of these positions that are really hard to hire for. Well, how wrong was I? and I think it's been really, really fascinating to see that it's been the complete opposite. So when that was happening and you were preparing and, you know, in preparing your network at MRI, first of all, what did you think was going to happen? And then how did you react when we started to see how the talent market actually was starting to evolve?
Yeah. When you think about, you know, I sat down with my business partner, Joe Mullings. We sat down and did a podcast, and this was in February, March of 2020. And we're thinking July or August is what we were thinking, right? So July, August, we're going to be out of this thing. We're going to have to ride the storm out, so to speak. And it didn't take long for us to understand this. It was going to be an elongated journey that we were all going to go on. Fortunately for us, we have a beautiful studio that we're able to do town halls and bring people together. We're able to bring our network together through a digital medium and have conversations with them beyond just a computer screen. and we were able to do virtual award banquets and things of that nature. And it allowed us to really make decisions that were going to be more more leaning toward communication via a digital approach. And then when we realized it was going to be an elongated journey as well, we started looking at the different ways that we had to take care of our own people. And the first thing was making sure everybody was safe, certainly over-communicate, and then think about what pivots we had to make in our own businesses to do business. Contract staffing was one of those that we started promoting and educating our offices that they had this other solution set out there available to them. We payroll that, we do the entire back office, and we're able to bring that solution to them as they grow their business. And they took advantage of that. What came out of that then was we've continued to grow and build upon that. And we are now as an entire world, we're learning to live with this thing. We're now conducting commerce. We have our own issues of supply chain and various other challenges. And to your point earlier, Kyle, it's gone to complete opposite of what we might have thought and where the fears might have been, in that the battle for the best talent is at an all-time high, even greater than, you know, Y2K. And it's at an all-time high. And I do not see it really letting up. I do see it evening out and becoming more normalized, but it's not going to let up for a period of time.
When Molly, Patrick, and I started to figure out how to start our own podcast, we didn't know where to start. Thankfully, we found Buzzsprout. Buzzsprout makes it super easy for us to upload our episodes, track our listeners, and get listed on all the major podcast networks. Today's a great day to start your own podcast. I know that you're one of our listeners, so you've definitely got something to say. Whether you're looking for a new marketing channel, have a message you want to share with the world, or just think it would be fun to have your own talk show, podcasting is an easy, inexpensive, and fun way to expand your reach online. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed in all the major podcast directories within minutes of finishing your recording. Podcasting isn't that hard when you have the right partners. The team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. And now, for listeners of Rebel HR, you can get a $20 Amazon gift card sent to you from Buzzsprout by clicking in the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.
So, you know, I'm on social media and sometimes I hate it, but I'm always seeing and I'm always hearing people talk about people who just don't want to work, right? So many people are on unemployment. Why do these people just not want to work? I don't believe that's the case. And I don't believe that's what's happening. I don't believe that's why we have a shortage of talent. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Or what are your thoughts on that?
No, I do agree. I think people are evaluating and reassessing what they want to do, particularly in hospitality, right? So hospitality was beat up the most. And many of those folks who always wanted to get out of hospitality. But as you know, when you're in hospitality, you're there for a reason. You love to be hospitable and you take care of people and you make people have a great experience and you want to delight your customers. The elongated period of time that they were out of work helped them reassess. And for those that were working the odd hours, they found that they could do other things through re-education, through upskilling, and find another path that they could go down. And so you're seeing hospitality really struggle. Even today, it's affecting how people are opening up restaurants in hotels. You know, you have these restaurants and hotels that are open 4 days a week or 3 days a week. And if they have more than one restaurant, they kind of, you know, juggle them back and forth. And you're seeing some of those challenges. I do believe people want to work. They absolutely do want to work, and but they are looking to find out what their next interest and career path is going to be. And for those companies that are able to offer upskilling, it's not just about offering people a job anymore. You cannot buy talent anymore. It goes beyond buying talent. It is, of course, it's base. It's bonus, it's LTIP, long-term incentive plans and benefits, all those normal things. But now people are really, they're making decisions around the values of an organization, which ultimately the values of an organization equals the culture. The outcome of that is the culture. And they're looking for purpose-driven companies. And that's how people are making decisions. And the companies that are understanding this, and leaders and CEOs that are addressing some of these topics, are the ones that ultimately are going to win. And the companies in the past that just tried to outbid or outbuy talent, they're not going to be able to do that any longer.
I couldn't agree more. And I see Kyle over there. He's loving it as well.
No, it's funny you said that. And I just wrote it down, circled it, put quotes around it. And, but I think it was so important. It's, you can't buy talent. Mm-hmm. And then how my brain works, then I immediately overdubbed the Beatles. You can't buy me love. You can't buy me talent. It's the same thing. But now that's going through my head. But the, I do think it's really fascinating. And I think about it in terms of, it's almost like the power dynamics have shifted, right? Back when I work in manufacturing, back when I started working in manufacturing, we could get away with paying, temporary labor, pretty low wages, didn't have to, they didn't have any sort of benefits or at least benefits that weren't, affordable. We could get away with that and tell them, if you do a great job, we'll hire you in 90 days. No, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's so different now. It doesn't work.
Well, yeah, it's great. I mean, it's interesting because the hiring brand is so important, and so many people have not taken care of their hiring brand. I mean, I guarantee you have listeners out there that will hear this and they've heard this particular phrase, especially if you're a recruiter and you're talking to a hiring manager and you're like, well, you need to have this, and here's the program, here's the title and path, and here's the money that it would take to get them to say yes today. And you have hiring managers out there going, well, look, this is our offer, but here's our brand, here's our company, here's our product. If they want to work here, they will take the job. If not, then we'll move on to the next candidate. I mean, I've heard that so many times over the last 27 plus years that the shift in power has changed. And for those that refuse to embrace that, they'll refuse to embrace at their own peril. The candidates, or what we'd like to call as individuals versus candidate, the individual is the power is in their hands in many cases. And the companies that know how to engage those individuals in a way that's going to help them be who they can be, versus just offering them a job and a career path, those companies are going to win. So the companies need to be able to tell people or show people a path about helping others see what and who they can be at that organization.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting from my perspective. I've also heard that in an exit interview, where we haven't done a great job building up that brand, even as somebody's been an employee and they're leaving to go do something that is something that they want to pursue. There's opportunity out there to do things that are super exciting. And a lot of times it's for the same amount of money and rarely less, but every once in a while I've heard that too. And so I think if you're ignoring that, that hiring brand or that employee brand in general, you're going to lose people and you won't be able to hire them, which is a losing combination the last time I checked.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And production retention align with that. So, there are numbers out there where production and retention align very well with positively for those companies that have a positive hiring brand versus those who do not.
So that's something I wanted to dig into a little bit, and I know it's one of the areas that you have some expertise, and that's, how do you structure your talent acquisition strategy to build that hiring brand? Is it as simple as, oh, I just need to make sure that I have the right pamphlet, or put some pretty pictures and a cool slogan and get something to go viral? My assumption is it takes a little bit more than that. So for those practitioners that are sitting here listening and maybe don't have a lot of experience here, or they're just tired of banging their head against the wall and not seeing any traction with their talent acquisition strategies, you know, where do you start? How do you start to build out this hiring brand?
Well, first of all, it takes time, and it has to be who you are. So, when you think about, you know, what is it that you do every day? If I look at our space, guys, I mean, we impact companies tremendously, but more importantly, we impact individuals every single day. So, give you an example. If you look at my search firm, Protus Global, I mean, we speak to 1,200 people a week, you know, and those people have husbands, wives, partners, girlfriends, boyfriends, and children, grown children. And some of them maybe even have grandchildren that are starting to enter the workforce. And so when you do that, we're impacting 500,000 people a year that we're talking to, that we can have an impact on their career path, which then in line, that impacts the people that are really, really close to them. Then when I take that up to and extrapolate that to MRI Network and our 300 plus offices, we're literally impacting millions of people every single day. And so it all starts there. And then when you bring it back, if you understand the foundation of in your sector and what you do each day and how it impacts others, it starts to inform you then how you want to respectfully credential yourself and your brand. And if you do that, I know this word's overused, you do that authentically, or you're being real, then you'll have people that will lean in over the course of time. And the platform we use, because it's we use LinkedIn because it's a learning platform. We spend our time helping teach helping teach people how to really, from a digital perspective, how to communicate and build their brand through information, education, and aspiration. Because we have too many people in the room of white noise where it is, we just broke a record. Look at us. We're great. We're the best firm out there. Here's this job. I mean, that's the white noise, man. You got to get people out of that cocktail, reception into a new room. And the way you do that is they start paying attention. You start building a voice when you inform, educate, and inspire.
You know, I used to work with an individual who, great guy, but he always used to say, you know what, why are we here? We're here to make money. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, it didn't really engage and inspire. it just didn't work. And I think, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that. If you look at it, you know, generationally, and you look at typically where we're targeting right now is the largest population of potential employees or millennials and Gen Z. And all the statistics that you look at as you look at like some of the surveys of these populations is, you know, they would take, you know, a pay cut to work for a socially responsible company. Three quarters of them would, you know, they'll consider a social environmental commitments before accepting a job. 72% believe racial equality is the most important issue today. You know, so these kinds of things, you know, I agree that authenticity is probably overused, but yeah, being real and living up to your promises, I think is more important now than ever.
Well, it better be in your DNA. If it's a program or an initiative that leadership has come up with where you're checking off boxes and doing certain things that, you know, seem to be reflective of the marketplace and what you're hearing in the media, that becomes very obvious very quickly. I mean, when it's part of your DNA and you're living it and your actions show that, it's really, really easy to get people to embrace it. Multi-generational, by the way, as well. I mean, from boomers like me, we already did an REO reference with Riding the Storm Out, and we had a Beatles reference already. So
there you go.
Young listeners out there, go Google those bands. But it, you know, boomers, Xers, millennials, And now the Z is coming behind them. I mean, we really have, we have five generations working together, and you better be able to relate to all of them, and help them all be able to assimilate and be successful together in an office or within a company for sure.
Yeah, it has to be more than words. And, you know, you're talking about all these generations in one workplace. It really has to be inclusive as well. And I think the differentiator between some of the organizations that are successful in talent acquisition is they know how to share that brand, to share the cool things they're doing in their organizations that gets people excited, where some people just, I think they miss a lot of opportunity by not sharing who they are, what they are authentically.
Yeah. Well, there's that, you know, Molly, it's interesting because I hear so often, you know, I want work-life balance. And I, you know, I understand what it means to some people. Everybody has their own definition. Really what that means to me, it's not work-life, it's life. I mean, when you find your calling, you find what you're doing, it becomes part of who you are and part of that DNA. And therefore, you know, you don't have to bounce back and forth. And when you have something like that, then who you really are tends to, you know, it tends to be then communicated or seen very naturally, both from the people and your teammates you're working with, as well as, you know, in your home and your personal friends that you hang out with.
Yeah. And you also said that it takes time. And I agree, it does take time. This is something I'm super passionate about, is just showcasing a brand specifically for talent acquisition. And I've been in that situation before where that was one of my key objectives. And it took a lot of persistence, but what was really cool is once you started getting some momentum, I mean, it all just kind of kept going, right? And it was probably one of the best feelings in the world.
Well, you guys are a testament of that right now. Your podcast over the last, you know, 18 months, you guys started with an idea and you kept doing it, and ultimately, you know, it got traction, and now you're, you know, you've just been consistent with it, and you're able to then, you know, lean on it a little bit, which is outstanding.
Well, I appreciate that. I do think it's really interesting. You know, the term you used, it has to be in your DNA. And immediately I start to think about, you know, from the context of an organization, you know, that really comes down to those interactions amongst people within your teams. It, you know, on the talent acquisition side, it's about the interactions that your interviewers have, you know, with a candidate. You know, obviously you got to make sure your website's on point. You got to make sure that your, you know, your external marketing's good. But it comes down to those people interactions so many times. And you know, I think that I've had this conversation a lot, especially with all the concerns about retention and the great resignation and some of these things that are, all these fears that are out there. And people ask me about stickiness. And I think it works both for talent acquisition and for talent retention. But you know, for me, stickiness is about somebody's experience with the workplace, somebody's experience with their coworkers. You know, a lot of times it's not even about the job that they're doing, as long as they have the right level of skill. It's about the interactions. It's about the connections they have at work, the connections to the mission, the connections to the work that they do. And then, you know, to kind of bring it back to the point you started with, Bert, on, you know, work-life balance, like when everything's aligned there and when things are good, it's like, I don't want to stop working. Like, this is fun. Like, I like this, right? Like it's more about work-life integration, right? Like, I, you know, how do I keep doing the things I love to do and just make sure that, you know, I continue to, you know, to have other aspects of my life that are important to me personally, you know, not take a back seat. But I don't know. That's kind of the secret sauce.
Well, I mean, that's the way that we all make decisions. There's really three legs on the stool: personal, professional, and financial. And they have to be, they're not going to be equal. They're all different to everybody, to where you lean toward one or the other. However, they have to be reasonably aligned and balanced, I should say, because that ends up affecting your daily behavior. And when they're reasonably balanced, in your behaviors will reflect that. And that's when you have something pretty magical. The other thing just came up that you guys said relative to folks making decisions. Money's a big part of how they make the ultimate decision. However, having said that, it's the door that gets cracked. And, you know, my firm, we're just as guilty. We've made our own mistakes, not listening well enough or whatever the case may be. We're all guilty of it. But being cognizant of that and owning it is so important. So leaders out there, if you get, you know, generally your people, your really good ones, man, they're rolling down the tracks. But there's always that crack in the door of, perhaps they feel undervalued. They're not listened to. Perhaps you have the connective tissue in your organization is a tear, a torn ligament there, and that's another individual. And they're watching you. Your folks, your good folks, watch you every single day about how you deal with underperformers or people that are not good for the outcome of what ultimately is, you know, the value system, which ultimately equals the outcome, which is the culture. And that's very damaging. And when you have that small crack, eventually that crack can blow open.
Absolutely. I wish I could say I had not personally experienced that in an organization that I worked in. But a lot of times, I mean, and Molly, I know you feel this, but unfortunately, a lot of times, by the time we get involved, that crack is now a fissure, and it's something you're trying to build a bridge over, and the damage is not irreparable sometimes, but pretty close to it. And I think that's why, you know, going back to your comment, that's why you've got to live and breathe, you know, in your DNA. Your mission, vision, values, you know, your brand, and the things that you tolerate are the things that eventually will become your culture, right?
Right.
Yes. You guys will appreciate this. I just had someone in my organization come to me today, a leader in my organization, and said, "All right, we got to fix this retention problem, and you're HR, so this is your problem. You need to fix this retention problem." And I'm like, my mind, I think, blew up because it can't be just us. You know, it has to be a collaboration with every leader in your organization. It's not just a one person. And I think HR is in a tough spot. So I think all we can do is lead the way, have some of those hard conversations that, no, this is not just a me problem. Let's fix this together. And here are some ways, here's what I'm seeing. But we have to do this together.
So what'd you say, Molly? Now I'm curious. How'd you react?
I said, me personally, in my role, I feel like I have done everything I can do without the support of the team.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, Molly, is that if you go, I mean, most everybody wants to feel, large companies included, you know, Fortune 1s, Fortune 5s, they want to feel engaged with their CEO. They may not always be in the room and shake their hand, but they want to feel engaged with their CEO. Having said that, only 17% of the people feel engaged with their CEO. And that's problematic. I mean, the reason that exists is a little bit of what you experienced today. So,
yeah. That's a huge opportunity, though, for everybody.
This podcast doesn't get you in trouble.
Yeah. 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 Molly, we need to edit. Who listens to this on your team?
No. Although I just think I think a lot of HR people can relate, and it's a challenging spot to be. And kind of going back to the persistence thing, I think all good changes, it just takes a lot of persistence, a lot of patience. You know, I actually have on my bulletin board behind me 5 characteristics of a change agent. And number 2 is patient yet persistent. And I really think that's what it takes.
Well, look, Molly, look what you, in your role, you have so much coming at you in the HR function. Always have. A lot of things, anything happens with people, oh, give it to HR. Recruiting, give it to HR. Compliance, give it to HR. Problem children, give them to HR. Everything comes to HR. And really, we have, I don't know what CEO originally made that call way back when, but HR has been bombarded with everything around those particular issues in corporate America and others. Now what you're facing, Molly, is today and going forward, environmental wellness, mental wellness, mm-hmm. Safety for people coming into organizations, and a large, you know, your listeners are out there that run large HR in large organizations. Some of the CHROs out there, they face that at a certainly an elevated level, and so there's a ton of pressure coming at HR, even more so than in the past.
You know, but that's really it's a kudos to our industry, looking at the positive side here, that we do now have that seat at the table, and that, you know, our CEOs and they're looking to us for solutions. So it is a good place to be. Challenging, yep. but it feels good.
Yeah, so I'm curious on your perspective on this, Bert, because you touched on something that I think is maybe a little bit controversial, but I think is an interesting point. And that is, should talent acquisition, should recruiting be an HR function?
Yeah, great question, Kyle. And I would say no. I would say no. What I've noticed some companies have done is, they've gone into what they call talent acquisition. We use the words talent access, but acquisition is well known in the marketplace. They've gone into talent acquisition. They're really, you're starting to see CHROs starting to be put into the roles, and you're starting to see a lot of folks being brought in to lead D&I in organizations. So companies are paying attention, which is a good thing. But HR was put in place originally to help people, listen to people, run compliance, ensure that it's a good, safe environment, proper communication, that all the pens were lined up correctly for the employees in an organization. And what we've done over the last several decades is we've dumped these other things on top of HR around talent acquisition or recruitment. And technology has accelerated the process and the importance and the pressure that is put on HR today to deliver. And then there's finger pointing, right? I hear all the time from hiring managers, well, HR is not providing me a slate of, I can't get people from them. And you hear that pressure. All right, Molly, I need 10 people in 2 weeks, whatever the case may be. And it's just unrealistic. If I asked every CEO in America right now, what's the number one most important thing to your organization? If the first two answers, one of the first two answers doesn't happen to be their people, that's a problem. But almost, I would venture to guess 90% of those CEOs will say people. Well, if people are your number one asset to your organization, to your day-to-day, to your growth, to your innovation, to your execution, then if you are not respecting that and not helping build the people within your organization to do nothing but that and have a process by going out and winning the best talent, it doesn't reconcile. You're talking out of both sides of your mouth. And what happens is when you give HR all these things, Kyle and Molly, you now are creating utility players in your organization. Utility players, it's hard to be great. It's hard to be great and be a utility player in a company. You need to have your role, and you need to be great at your role, and because your role is very, very important for the overall collective outcome of an organization.
Yeah, I resemble that remark. and I can speak, I'll speak openly that, in my current role, when I started, I was pure generalist, department of one. And really had to build up. It wasn't until, I had support from a leader who certainly believes that people are the most important aspect of the business, to invest in resources. And the approach there from my standpoint, so I tend to shift more to the sales side of things anyways. That's how, that was my undergrad and all that. So I tend to focus more on the talent acquisition and kind of the culture building side. And then I hired people who can actually be the subject matter experts in the areas like compliance and safety and some of the areas that just aren't natural strengths. But I actually think the whole, like the whole push for HRs to be like generalists in every aspect, it's just, it's just not going to work. It's going to pursue the entire organ, the entire career into mediocrity if we try to be good at everything. That's just
yeah. There's not many great generalists good at something, which I just said, and that was an oxymoron, obviously, because if you're a generalist, you're not great at something. You're great at being a generalist, perhaps, but it's really hard to be great at your role when you're asked and being pulled or pushed or, you know, taking on things based on the fact that people want to hand them off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's interesting. And I'm sure there's probably some listeners right now who are kind of frustrated and sitting here thinking, well, gee, you know, I'm in a small organization. I don't have the benefit. I don't have unlimited budget. You know, how do I think about this? And, you know, one of the things I would say is, listen, I don't come from a huge company. We have resources, but just because something isn't my core job doesn't mean that I don't have a number of resources within the organization available to me. So as opposed to trying to be all things HR and trying to be, let's say, a recruiting expert, go tap your hiring managers, give them the system to be successful, but let them go pick the talent. They're the ones that want them on their team anyways. I mean, I'm the first to admit, I don't know the best, you know, developer. Right. But when you start talking Python and C#, I'm like, I don't even know, you know, C#, is, I don't think there's a C#, it's a music note. Like, you know, like we don't have to be experts in that. What we should be experts is coordinating and connecting those resources together so that we can focus on the things we are good at.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a department of one for the most part in a small business, and that's exactly what I did. You know, I went to my marketing person and I said, hey, I know your expertise is not recruiting, but I need your help creating this brand and sharing this brand. And I gave her some direction and she just killed it. You know, I took some of our most passionate people in our office and some of our stores who are passionate about culture and engagement. And I developed a culture committee of not HR people, but just people who are talented and passionate. And so now they run all things culture related, all of our engagement initiatives. And it took so much off of my plate. And it was great for the organization. So Kyle, I am a testament to that. Yes. Great advice.
And Bert, just to give you some unsolicited, you know, backing here for anybody else who's listening, I guarantee you that Bert probably has a solution available because that's what he does. Is to help make sure that there are people who are living and breathing and connected to this type of work that are experts that will be able to be specialists in the type of things that you need help with. So there are resources out there.
Yeah, there are, Kyle. Thank you. And what I would also say in small business, and most of our firms are small business, 15 years ago, if you asked what's number one hire for your firm, they would say a business developer or a salesperson. That'd be the number one hire in growing a firm. We asked this question at a most recent conference that we had. We asked this question amongst our network. And the number one answer that came out of it was an executive assistant or chief of staff. Hmm. Their first hire. If you were starting from scratch today, even though you're a small business, you got to keep in mind, you have to put people in the right positions to win and not ask them to play multiple positions. You know, you put Tom Brady a defensive end, you wouldn't know who Tom Brady is, right? He's Tom Brady because he plays the right position on the field. And so, you know, today you have to have people in the right roles. And that role is very critical to people starting a business, people leading a business, and allowing them to be do many, many of the high value activities that they have to do to run the business and grow the business the right way. Versus being pulled into, you know, 5 or 10 other different things, which tends to happen in most organizations.
Let me tell you, a good executive assistant is worth their weight in gold. Seriously, I totally understand that. I wouldn't have understood that a few years ago if you would have asked me. I would have thought, you know, that I don't understand it. But yeah, the right person in that role, that's one of the people that I shortchanged in my comment is I also have a really great executive assistant that doesn't even work directly for me, but is just somebody that helps with so many of the aspects that pull away our attention on the value added people first processes that we have to do. So with that being said, I wish we could keep talking. We can keep going here, but we are steadily coming to the end of our time together, and I want to be respectful of your time, Bert. You are a busy guy. So we are going to shift gears and go into the Rebel HR flash round.
Oh, okay.
All right. The first question, what is your favorite people book?
Good to Great.
I love that book. I have that book. Well, of course, everybody's supposed to have it on their, you know, behind them and in their desk. And
you know what's been introduced to me recently? What's been introduced to me by about five people, including my business partners, Radical Candor, which I love as well. It really serves well, and it serves itself well in today's environment.
Love that. Two great books. If you haven't heard of those books, check them out. Well worth it. Good to Great for me. That's one. I was lucky enough to read that in college, and it was very, very formative. And even though I didn't go, I'm not a traditional, you know, HR undergrad or anything like that. They didn't have that where I went to school. But that book helped kind of lay the foundation for what I thought HR could be. So yeah, definitely check it out. Question number two, who should we be listening to?
Chris Voss, The Art of Negotiation. That book, Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. It's so non, he comes at it from a different approach than academia, although there's a combination thereof throughout in the way that he approaches negotiation. And I think there's so much practicality to learn, everything from strategic components to the behavioral side, the way people respond to the pace by which you talk, the way you change voice inflection, or just simply listen and ask questions based off what was been asked. It's a magical book.
I love that. You know, the interesting thing, and I'm sure, you know, an HR person's like, well, I don't need a book on negotiation. You know, I'm not negotiating contracts or sales. Well, let me tell you, it's all a negotiation.
Well, you negotiate at home, you negotiate with your kids, yeah. You negotiate with your husbands, your wives. And as Chris will say, for those that say they think they have this down pat, and he, you know, I can't do his voice quite as well as he does, but negotiation's a perishable skill. And if you're being successful, then you're probably, it's a perishable skill. You're probably being successful in spite of yourself. So listen to Chris Voss.
I love that. I love that. There's so much in my job. I would have gotten more into that world. Molly's shaking her head up and down.
Completely
oh, yeah.
Agree.
All right. Last question. Hard hitting one here. How can our listeners connect with you?
Yeah. Thank you. First of all, Instagram. Bert Miller, B-E-R-T Miller, at Bert Miller MRI, or at Bert Miller MRI. That's both Instagram and Facebook and whatever else is out there, Twitter. And then LinkedIn, obviously you can look me up, Bert, B-E-R-T, Bert Miller. I'd love to connect with you guys. And I would love for those who have not listened via YouTube to be on the bottom line with Bert Miller, to look it up and listen to it. Some great guests, including Chris, but also the CEO of Hostess and Peter Mondavi and guys, the head of Bacardi, Pete Carr. There's some really fantastic people, terrific leadership approaches that are out there. And these are the CEOs and heads of business that really navigated tough waters over the last several months and did so extremely well. So there's a lot to learn on Beyond the Bottom Line with Bert Miller.
Love that. Great content out there. And, I think, Molly mentioned it. If you're trying to figure out get into the head of, you know, your CEO or your business's owner, or try to understand the challenges of your business leaders, you know, hearing it directly from those leaders themselves is the best way to learn. So thank you for putting that content out there, Bert.
Thank you.
That being said, that is all the time we have today. Check out Bert Miller. We will have all that information in the show notes. MRI Networks as well, a great organization. Thank you so much for spending your time with us and sharing some of your knowledge with us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Molly, Kyle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, that does it for the Rebel HR Podcast. Big thank you to our guests. Follow us on Facebook at Rebel HR Podcast, Twitter at Rebel HR Guy, or see our website at rebelhumanresources.com. The views and opinions expressed by Rebel HR Podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any of the organizations that we represent. No animals were harmed during the filming of this podcast.
Baby.